Dhamma friends, so we are coming to the next session of this mindfulness for young adult session. So here we are discussing Pena Pindupama Sutta, and we are keeping this sutta as a topic, as a theme. And last time we discussed about the form aggregate. So basically in this sutta, Buddha gives very strong five similes to represent five aggregates, five khandhas. So as you know, according to the Buddha's teaching, this whole experience, this whole psychophysical experience can be divided into five aggregates. That is the form aggregate, rupakkhandha, vedana aggregate, that is the feeling, and then sanya khandha, the perceptions aggregate, sankharakkhandha, mental formations aggregate, and vijnanakkhandha, the consciousness aggregate. So any experience can be further analyzed and divided into all these five aggregates. And if one is able to properly recognize these aggregates, properly understand these aggregates, so they are, his understanding, his insight is quite broad and powerful, and he would be able to understand its empty nature, understand its non-self nature, impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature. So this is where these, the teaching of the five aggregates are quite powerful and quite interesting. And again, that is why Buddha here has given emphasis to recognize these experiences, these five aggregates, by means of various similes. Now these similes are quite powerful, and again fairly closer to our direct experience. As we discussed last time, when we consider the body, it appears like something solid, and it appears like kind of heavy, strong, something substantial, something valuable. But more and more closely we look at it, there one will understand there is nothing substantial, nothing valuable, and they are completely subject to cause and effect, and completely dependent, and it requires water, food, etc. to sustain. And again, if we consider it a little bit more, it consists of so many bodily parts coming together, fixed together, assembled together. It appears like something as a one unit, but it has so many bodily components, parts, faculties. And even more than that, if we go even deeper, one will understand it is nothing but four elements. So these elements are constantly changing, nothing permanent, inconstant, and constantly arising and passing away, subjected to change, very rapid change. So whatever is impermanent can't give or can't provide sustained happiness, lasting happiness, because on the next moment it has changed to something else. So you can't expect lasting happiness from this sort of an environment, from this sort of a phenomena. So therefore, expecting happiness from this form aggregate is impossible, and it is kind of a delusion. So there you will understand the empty nature, insubstantial nature, non-self nature of the body. Now Buddha, giving a simile to the body, he says that one may look at in a river bank, and there are, because of the waves, there may be various form, F-O-A-M, kind of a blob of form generated because of these again and again repeated waves. For a person who looks at from the distant, can't recognize it as a blob of form, but probably he might even misunderstand, thinking it is a kind of a white color stones. But once he come closer and examine it carefully, he will understand it is not something valuable, there is nothing valuable there, and it is completely empty, it is hollow. So that is the globe of form, there is no value. So there Buddha mentioned similarly the form aggregate, Rupakhanda, is very similar. More you closely examine it, you will understand even though it appear like solid as a unit, it consists of so many parts, consists of so many element characteristics, and these element characteristics are subject to change, and it's quite transient, inconstant. So there is nothing substantial there. There is no self there. So similarly, Buddha talks about, explains about the feeling aggregate. So there also the simile is quite interesting. He first gives us the simile. So there he mentioned that during the autumn, there's a heavy rain. So even assume that the first drop of rain may falls on a river, may falls on a kind of a reservoir. So there, because of this rain drop, there's a water bubble generated and immediately burst. Assume that there's another water drop, say rain drop. Because of this droplet, again a water bubble generates, and again it immediately burst. Now similarly, now if you see kind of a real rain, so it's a, I mean rapidly, there are many water bubbles, these rain drops are touching the water surface. As a result, water bubbles are generated. They are everywhere now. Water bubbles are generated and burst. Water bubbles are generated and burst. Now this is the picture, this is the simile Buddha is giving us for the feeling aggregate. So there, if one see the feelings, at the beginning it appear like something, as a some unit, as a some one thing. But more closely you look at it, more say carefully you examine it, there you will understand it is not a single feeling, but rather it's a collection of minute feelings. So each minute feeling is so impermanent, so inconstant. It is subjected to arising and passing away. Quickly arise, quickly pass away. It won't last for a long time. It is very short lifespan, and the very moment it arises, the same moment almost, it passes away. So this kind of a nature is there to each and every these minute feelings. And if you consider pleasurable feelings, the same story. So all the pleasurable feelings, they appear like kind of a something, as a kind of a pleasurable feeling that we like to attach. But if we closely examine it, you will understand it's a collection of minute feelings. Altogether, it appear like a pleasurable feeling, and that is to which we get attached. But if we closely analyze it, examine it, there we will understand there is no constant happy feeling, pleasurable feeling. Rather, it's a constantly changing minute series of feelings, collection of feelings. So each and every minute feeling is subject to arise and pass away. So it's a rapid arising and passing away. So like Buddha mentioned from that example, from that simile, there are the, because of the heavy rain, when the heavy rain drops onto a water surface, then and there are the water bubbles are generated and burst. Water bubbles are generated and burst. Similarly, wherever in the body, wherever it is, when the feelings are arising, they are subjected to this sort of a situation. They constantly arise and pass away. Now, during Vedananupassana session, suppose that you have fairly gained some understanding about Kayanupassana, where you are able to recognize various bodily phenomena, bodily characteristics, element characteristics. Now, as you move forward, probably you can even recognize various feelings. So there are happy feelings, pleasurable feelings, there are, say, painful feelings, and mostly there are equanimous feelings. So typically what happens is, to various pleasurable feelings, we immediately get attached to. And from various painful feelings, we immediately want to get rid of. And equanimous feeling, we don't want to know, we don't simply want to ignore it, because they are quite boring. So there are, we are trying to switch it to either pleasurable feelings. We don't like to be in a sort of a calm, boring type of equanimous feeling. and immediately we want to replace it with some pleasurable feeling. So that is why sort of every time there is a agitation in the mind, looking forward to any kind of a pleasurable state, rather than just be with this calmness, rather than just be with this equanimity, so that we are not appreciating. So this is the typical approach. But Buddha asks us to look at these feelings. So Buddha asks us to examine these feelings. So in order to examine these feelings, we need to first of all prepare some amount of, say, concentration in the mind, sort of a very careful, focused attention, because I suppose there are various bodily feelings, so we have to direct our attention to that area. So we have to maintain our attention, our focus onto that particular area for a considerable period of time. So we have to maintain that concentration. And because of that concentration, we are able to more closely examine the feeling. It's like that you are focusing a microscope. So if you want to look at some sort of a phenomena through a microscope, so you have to properly focus it. And you have to light it, you have to illuminate it, and you have to adjust it proper distance. Then only it may get properly focused to the whatever the plate, the sample underneath. So once all these conditions are satisfied, the microscope has to be very stable. It can't shake. So therefore all these external conditions have to be satisfied, then only you are able to get a correct reading. So similarly in the Vedananupassana, so first of all you have to prepare your mind so that you have a fairly one-pointed concentration. And that has to be maintained for a considerable period of time till you are able to examine various feelings. And while examination, you can't have a biased attitude. So for example, for a pleasurable feeling, still you have to maintain kind of a distance while you are observing it. Say even for painful feelings, you can't immediately hate it, get rid of it. Rather, you have to still maintain some patience and kind of a distance, and then observe it. And with the equanimous feelings, they are also, you can't ignore it. Rather, you should be able to examine it without ignoring it, without trying to get out of it, replace it. Rather, you got to recognize each and every equanimous feelings as it is. Say for example, even if we consider breathing. So breathing is a typically, we can say, as a equanimous feeling. It generates equanimous feeling. Rising and falling also has sort of an equanimous feeling. So we can change this whole scenario to the feelings perspective. Rising and falling may be considered as, say, equanimous feelings. Various equanimous feelings are arising and changing and passing away. So whatever the sensations available in the body, mostly they could be equanimous feelings. So rather than ignoring them and looking at for some painful or pleasurable feelings, we should be able to even recognize these equanimous feelings. They are not that, prominent. Sometimes we have to be very careful so that we are able to recognize these equanimous feelings. So more and more we look at them, so there we will understand. So this arising and passing away nature, inconstant nature, coming and going nature, is common to all three types of feelings. May it be pleasurable feelings, may it be painful feelings, or even for the equanimous feelings, these characteristics, this arising and passing away, this inconstant nature, this unsatisfactory nature, and impermanent nature is quite common. So more and more one recognizes this information or their behavior, there's a kind of a disenchantment happens in the mind. So at the beginning we are very closely examining these various feelings. Now, because of this disenchantment, unattached nature, so now mind further detached from various feelings. Previously, actually, we had kind of an attraction towards pleasurable feelings and kind of a repulsion from the painful feelings and we ignore the equanimous feelings. But now we are able to have kind of a same attitude or equanimous attitude towards all three types of feelings. We are not getting attracted to the pleasurable feelings, neither we get repelled from painful feelings, nor we get even ignore the equanimous feelings. We have that mindful space while being there. We are able to observe any type of feelings non-judgmentally. Observe any kind of feelings in a more distant manner. So this is kind of an evolution happens in our practice. First of all, we need to recognize various feelings, and more we closely examine them, we may understand it's not a single feeling, it's a collection of feelings. And then we are trying to closely examine their true nature, how they are behaving. There we will understand their impermanent, inconstant, unsatisfactory, non-governable nature. And more we understand it, so that's kind of a distant observation, unparticipated observation is going to happen. So now you are not making any kind of a defilement because of these feelings. There may be various pleasurable feelings, but you are not going attached with them and making the mind lustful. On the other hand, there may be various painful feelings and you are not repelled by them and making kind of a hatred, aversion towards them. Rather, you are able to be patient with these painful feelings and still you are able to recognize them, examine them and learn from them. Similarly, even the equanimous feeling, you can properly recognize them, understand them, recognize their behavior, understand their behavior and to learn from them. More and more we learn, so the clarity of mind improves, insights are increasing, understanding increasing, wisdom increasing, and as a result, more and more unattached nature in the mind. So you are now not attracted, you are not repelled, you are not ignored. Rather, you are able to maintain kind of a mindful space, kind of a vantage point. And while being there, you are able to examine, observe any of these kind of feelings. Because you now understand they have the nature to come and go. They have the nature to arise and pass away. Their satisfaction is quite limited. So their pain is quite limited. So they have the nature to change. So more and more you look at them, so the disenchantment happens, dispassion happens, and now at a given moment, probably your mind probably might completely let go of any kind of feelings, all the kinds of feelings. Now mind has nothing to attach. Previously there were feelings, but now all these feelings were faded away. And they almost like calm down, they become blurred, and now there is nothing to attach, nothing to examine. So mind become sort of free, mind has nothing to observe. So mind has started to enjoy its own kind of a freedom, non-attachment, no bondage, no binding, and say unassociated, and there are no upadana, clinging. So this is where Buddha explained. So this examination of various feelings and their arising and passing away nature, coming and going nature, will lead to this kind of a dispassion, will lead to this kind of unattached nature of in the mind, unassociated nature in the mind. So there we can recognize, so Buddha mentioned, Buddha emphasized, there is nothing substantial in any of these feelings. Though they appear like significant, though the pleasurable feelings appear like very significant, attractive, so as we are more closely examine them, then you will understand there is nothing substantial. Nothing not worthy of attaching to. And even though the painful feelings previously appear like devils, like say demons, so they are also... Once you are improving the patience, forbearance, so there you will understand, okay, I can go through it. That also will change. And now you are not afraid of them. So they become your teacher. So you have confidence to observe any kind of feelings. So more and more you recognize, understand, so the clarity of mind improves, wisdom improves, and none of the feeling now cannot arise without your knowledge. So any kind of feeling, if they are arising, you know it. If any kind of feeling remains, you know it. Any kind of feeling passing away, you know it. Vidita vedana upajjati, vidita upatthandi, vidita abbattam gacchanti. That is how Buddha explained. So as we are more and more closely examine it, develop this meditation, so there Buddha mentioned, knowingly any kind of feeling arise, knowingly it remains, stays, and knowingly it may pass away. So more and more, so the yogi become dispassionate, he is able to establish himself at this unattached nature, unassociated nature, anisita nature, without clinging to anything in the world. So this is kind of another level, another understanding level that vipassana is bringing us. So there one is able to maintain one's mindfulness in an effortless manner. Now you don't need to watch each and every kind of feeling. So you have understood very directly that they have the impermanent nature. They have the inconstant nature. They have the unsatisfactory nature. They have the non-governable, non-self nature. So that you have properly recognized. As a result, mind has let go of all these various kinds of feelings. Now mind has found its own freedom. Mind has its solace. Mind has its sort of oasis, island. So while being there, you can further develop. You can further develop bodhjangas if you like. So various enlightenment factors, awakening factors, you can further develop. But maintaining a very relaxed attitude, not in a kind of a striving attitude, but rather in a very relaxed attitude, calm attitude, tranquil attitude, dispassionate attitude, is an attitude of letting go. So that is how we have to further improve ourselves. And so this is what Buddha mentioned about the Vedana, the feelings. It's a very powerful meditation technique. And you can, of course, start from Kaya Anupassana so that you may gain some understanding about how to watch various typical bodily phenomena. With that, you will learn certain practice where how to maintain kind of a distance and watch it. Say, rising and falling at a distance and then watch it. Say, inhale and exhale, watch it. Similarly, you are able to watch painful feelings. Similarly, you are able to watch pleasurable feelings, equanimous feelings. So you are able to look at them objectively rather than sort of become attracted to pleasurable feelings, repelled from painful feelings, being ignorant about the equanimous feelings. Now you are able to distantly observe them with an objective manner. So that will lead to various insights. So that is what we have tried to discuss. So with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
Sorry, Bhante, there's currently four questions.
Yeah.
But before that, I'd just like to give a small announcement on our Easter retreat.
Yeah.
Might just share my screen. Give me a second. Can you see that?
Yes, we can.
Okay, we're having an Easter retreat that's going from the 2nd of April to the 5th, so that's Easter Friday to Easter Monday. Local groups that are doing like residential retreats, so if you haven't registered already, you can hang back after this session and ask any questions, or if you just got general questions on the retreat, you can hang back and talk to us about it. There's a small timetable change with the Dhamma talks, with a singular discussion, but otherwise the Zoom links and the forms are still the same. So just so you're aware that next week's program is actually replaced by this retreat. That was it. So with that, I'll go to the questions.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Question number one, mindful sitting. Venerable Sir, this is my report on sitting practice. When I start, I use the technique you use in the guided meditation to scan the body a bit and make sure that I'm aware of the body sensations to confirm that I am in the present moment. Afterwards, I try to observe the various sensations in the upper body and I feel the breath. Then I get to know the differences between in-breath and out-breath and many sensations around the nostrils, which I keep my focus on. After about 10 minutes of continuous technique, the breath starts to become subtle and fades away. My mind distracts, but I could bring it back by becoming aware of the sensations and reapply the observation process. Once the breath fades away and when I am in a relaxed state, the awareness slowly comes to my sitting posture. It is a very slow process and I observe the space that I am in comes forward, shrinks and concentrates on my body as something coming back to the body. The awareness comes inside the body deeper and deeper and focus around the sensation of my sitting posture, mainly the pressure on my back from the fall. It seems it's going deeper and deeper and never ending. I start to feel small movements and variations in the posture like vibrations. Since this is happening without an end in all the sitting sessions, should I now focus on the thoughts rather than the body posture? Thank you for the valuable guidance. Let's hear the question.
No, actually, I think you can continue with the sensations happening in the body because still there is something to learn. And no need to shift to thoughts, and they may, because so these sensations have the nature to change. So now it may be true that your attention may be going deeper and deeper, true, but at one point it may ends up. At one point you are able to recognize that they all calm down, they all tranquilized. So they are. You, if you like, you can watch the mind. So you rather than while these various bodily sensations are happening, you ignore them and watch the mind. Rather, you stay with these sensations and recognize them. And they are also taking you to some depth. And more you understand their nature. And assume that all these sensations now calm down. They naturally ceased. On such situation, you are now able to watch the mind. So mind also may be calm. So there are also nothing in the mind. There may be nothing in the surface of the mind. So there you simply be quiet. And if there are any thoughts appearing in the mind, now you can watch it. Actually, if you are able to see nothing in the mind, probably you can little reduce the concentration. Rather, say for example, those bodily sensations taken you to a very deeper level, deeper concentration, and now the mind is completely fixed with that. Now you can stay there for a long time, but it is not much fruitful because it is too deep concentration. So what you can do is little loosen it, little make it shallow, so that now probably mind again somewhat become restless. Again mind various thoughts going to happier. So there you recognize, okay, these are thoughts. There was no kind of a desirable thought, now desire has arisen. There was no aversion, now an aversion has arisen. So likewise, you allow the mind to be relaxed. So once it is being relaxed, probably it has been attached to something. It has distracted to something. So with these distractions, now we are learning. We are actually examining the mind. We are allowing the mind to move within our mindful light, we can say. So we are always with a very good, understanding, and we are focusing our attention to the mind, but still yet we are allowing it to move. We are not strongly holding it, we are not restricting it, so we allow it to play as it like. So then you are able to know, okay, they have the nature to come and go. various mental states happening and then disappearing, and various thoughts come and go. So likewise, now even you are understanding how mind works and how various perceptions are there, how we are sort of coloring it, how we are conditioning various things, how we are preparing things, constructing things. So more and more now we go to more deeper, subtle understandings about the mind. So this way we can further improve ourselves. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 5. This one is a general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for vividly explaining the empty, void and non-substance nature of the form during the current Dhamma talk. My question is regarding how one practically realizes this inherent nature of the form. We can logically think and understand these qualities and do a verbal contemplation. I recall some time back when mentioning the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, Bhante said, eventually you feel the emptiness, voidness and non-substance nature. Is it something similar to the hardness or heaviness or stress level that we feel in some of our thoughts, like anger, even before we verbalize and think that we are getting angry? I appreciate if Bhante can explain how this natural feel can be cultivated with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, that is where the what you call this Dhatu Manasikara elements meditation are quite powerful, quite useful. Where you keep your attention on the body, and there you recognize various element characteristics. So these element characteristics now become more prominent. Previously, you couldn't recognize much, but more you are practicing, so you are able to distinctly recognize various element characteristics. Now these clarity of element characteristics, the amount of element characteristics improve. At one point, they stop, and I mean, stop in the sense the number, the clarity may stop, and they start to show you a kind of a same story. They start to behave in a similar fashion. So now, rather than you are recognizing their individual characteristics, now you understand their common nature. What is their common behavior? So how are they arising? How long are they existing? How quickly are they disappearing? What are their common natures, common features, we can say? So they are more and more you look at it, so this solid body may start to almost disappear. It sort of fall apart, scatter, and this solid boundary, the demarcations, going to disappear. So it can happen because you are fairly focused onto the body. Previously you have proper boundaries, proper demarcations of the body, but now as more and more the element characteristics are recognized, more and more their behavior is understood, then these demarcations no more exist. So everything become blurred. So the boundaries become disappeared. So everything like flux, everything like fallen into pieces, broken to pieces, and is merged with the whole environment. So now you can't recognize in and out, or internal and external. So this boundary is going to disappear. So the duality going to disappear. Now internal elements, external elements are all very similar. So they are merely elements. So that is how, so you are recognizing. So it is not simply logically that you are understanding the insubstantial nature of the body. Rather, even in the meditation, more you closely and profoundly do this element meditation, Dhatu Manasikara, there you will actually experience these things. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 5, I think. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I'm trying to practice more than once a day and trying to improve my practice. The biggest issue I have with multiple sessions a day is the physical discomfort. The first sitting of 45 to 50 minutes is okay, but subsequent sessions are only limited to 20 to 35 minutes. my legs and whole body starts getting agitated and I come out of sitting automatically. I'm doing walking in between and 45 to 50 minutes walking practice seems okay. I know the physical discomfort of sitting will ease off gradually and at some point. Can I assume it might take 3 to 4 months of continuous practice? My selfish expectation is that someday I might be able to meditate like a cucumber at ease.
Yeah, I think your selfish expectation may come true. Because our body gets seasoned. So actually I can remember when I started, my knees become painful and one day I sort of decided, okay, without movement, I should stay for a longer time. But ultimately end up with some back pain and actually I have to apply some medicine and couldn't sit for a couple of weeks because I have stretched it too much. Because I should know the limit of the body. So because during our early stages, our body is not seasoned. Our body is not familiarized to this posture. So therefore, after say 15 minutes, 20 minutes, various aches and pains are going to appear. So there we are putting a little bit of a cushion, another pillow, and all various temporary solutions you can take. But anyway, with time, this will enhance, so nothing to worry. So it is a solution happens through the time. It's a practice. So through the practice, you will understand, okay, at 1 month before, I could only stay 10 minutes. Then I have to change the posture. But now I can sit comfortably for 15 minutes. But I can bear another 5 minutes. So say another month later, now I can comfortably sit for 20 minutes. But I can bear another 5 minutes. So likewise, you are stretching yourself. You are seasoning the body. So when it is happening, then actually you are more and more getting the support from the body. So therefore, soon your selfish wish may come true.
Question number 4 or 5. This is 2 parts. Marina part 1. Mind who is sitting. Venerable Bhante, my mind is calm and I'm in a state of mindfulness and bliss. But sometimes boredom after that 20 minutes makes me stop the practice. Am I right in understanding that I would continue anyway for the whole hour? That's the end of the question.
Sorry, Chatu, I got disturbed. Could you repeat it?
Okay. This is part 1, mindful sitting. Venerable Bhante, my mind is calm and I am in a state of mindfulness and bliss. But sometimes boredom after about 20 minutes makes me stop the practice. Am I right in understanding that I would continue anyway for the whole hour? That's
Yeah. Probably you also stretch it little by little. Say you become bored after 20 minutes. But you can bear it for another 10 minutes. Say next day or another, likewise, you gradually maintain this for little by little. Because if you stretch it too much, then it's difficult. Then you may sort of given up meditation because you are stretching too much. So here also kind of a gradual practice would be much appropriate. So it is true that once everything calms down, nothing to do. The mind has nothing to do, nothing to observe. There are no that much of various objects, incidents, phenomena available. So therefore, it appears like quite boring. So this boredom has to be slowly familiarized with. So definitely we should not immediately get up because of the boredom. Rather, little by little you familiarize with it. Because We are used to do something. So that is the problem with our human nature. So we don't know how just be. How not to do things. So we are always sort of we are driving towards various ambitions. We are driven by various ambitions, various desires, bhava tanha. So we are driven by bhava tanha. But now through vipassana, so you are coming to a level, coming to a stage where there is nothing to do. everything has ceased, calm down. So simply you have to relax, you have to rest. So this resting we interpret as boring, as monotony. So there you got to slowly familiarize with this monotony, this simple not doing kind of attitude, not constructing, not fabricating, just be. So slowly I feel it's better to improve rather than maintaining a long time.
To that question, mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Venerable Bhante, I have been advised that if after a busy day my mind has running thoughts, to simply know that it is so, rather than in any way try to change this. However, from a worldly perspective, running thoughts, regardless of their content, is a stress state of the mind and may be detrimental to a favorable or healthy trajectory in the lifestyle. In such a case, should I still perhaps calm myself down by drinking a herbal tea or question some of these thoughts as to their objectivity or rationality until my mind has fewer thoughts, under which condition I can continue vipassana? Thank you. That's the end.
Yeah, herbal tea is all right, I feel. Without taking a hot thing, probably herbal tea is not harmful. So actually it depends. So basically you can start with the walking practice rather than trying to sit and immediately expecting some sort of a calmness or tranquility. You can take a herbal tea and then you can go to a mindful walking. So there are actually, we should not kind of pressure the mind just to calm down, because then we are sort of trying to suppress the thoughts. So suppressing may not be the proper approach in the long run. So suppressing may be good, maybe at the beginning because of a lot of effort you may do it, but later you have to allow various thoughts to come up, but you are maintaining some patience, and again you know, simply being mindful about various thoughts, and you are not promoting any of these. You are not driven by any of these thoughts. You recognize they are thoughts, but they are now constantly coming. Can't help. I went through a lot of hardships. I went through various incidents, tiresome incidents, and as a result mind start to talk, too much agitation. Now you accept it. Okay, now today I went through a lot of problems, issues, a lot of agitation today. So you accept it, you forgive yourself, and now allow the mind to vomit it. So it's a kind of a catharsis. So you allow it and then come in, out. Then you, whatever comes out, you are simply letting go. You are not making it yourself. You are not claiming them as me or mine. So you simply allow it to go. So that is more appropriate than suppressing them. It definitely may take time. So it's worth, by the way. Because if we suppress them, then actually it generates some sort of a pressure, some sort of a stress in the mind. And even bodily, you might feel it. You might feel that you are suppressing it. You are crunching your teeth, you may feel it. But rather, if you maintain kind of a relaxed attitude and allow them to come and allow them to go. So it may definitely take time, can't help. But as they go, as they were gone out, then you feel kind of a perfect happiness or perfect calmness. There is nothing suppressed, but all these tensions have released. And they have ceased naturally. So this natural cessation is something worthy. Now, when you are going to mature kind of vipassana, we can say. So we are not trying to control. Rather, we allow things to happen. We accept things. And we can bear things. And we are not afraid of things. So they come and they are there, we allow them to be, but we are not reacting, we are not being deluded by them, and we know that they have the nature to come and go. they have the nature to arise and pass away. So we rest on that understanding. And because we are unwavering, so we have our mindful space, we are just staying there. And the mind have to settle, because we are not promoting this agitation. We are not sort of fertilizing, fueling this agitation. Rather, it will have to calm down, and ultimately it will calm down. So I think that is the wise approach, or the long-term approach that we have to undertake.
Question number 5. This is a theory question. Dear Bhante, during today's Dhamma sermon, there was a highlight about anisthita mind state. Is this the pre-runner to the arahant mind?
Could you repeat? Anisthita mind? This is a what? Arahant mind? What?
Is this the pre-runner to the arahant mind?
Right. Metta? Yeah, we can say so. Actually, the early stages. Actually, I can't give an experiential result of an arahant mind because I am not an arahant. So I can guess, by the way. So when you are experiencing anisthita state, unassociated state, even though it is not associated any kind of gross phenomena, there still may be some subtle phenomena. Say, for example, there is no lust, there is no anger, but there may be a little restlessness. So some little restlessness, little inner chatter, kind of a distant inner chatter could be there. But as you are improving, as you are progressing, even this very distant inner chatter may start to dilute. Now it may go more and more distant. So that is how this anisthita state also evolves. We can't say that at the very beginning, from the very beginning, we are experiencing the perfect, unassociated, unattached nature of an arahant. We can't say so. Rather, we may, as you mentioned, we may experience as it kind of a forerunner of the arahant's mind, unattached mind, unassociated mind, but still we may experience some disturbance. It is not yet 100% pure. So the disturbance are very close. I mean, they are very close by. We only have a very limited cocoon, or kind of very limited space where it unassociated, but still the enemies are very close by. But more and more we practice, these enemies, these disturbances, we can say, they go far and far. So now you can dwell in this anisthita state without much trouble. Previously, you have to maintain it. You have to be on guard in order to maintain it. But as you are improving, you don't need to much guard, because you know very well now the defilements are fairly subsided, fairly faded away, or fairly weakened. So little chance to disturb the anisthita state. So you can comfortably maintain it. Even in a very, say, with little effort, you can maintain it. And even at a shallow concentration, you can maintain it. You don't need to maintain a deep concentration. Instead, while even being in a shallow concentration, you can maintain it. So likewise, now you can see a kind of an evolvement in this anisthita state. So one day, assume that there are even a lot of disturbance from the outside. People are blaming, people are shouting, screaming. Still, suppose you are able to maintain anisthita state. You are not disturbed. You are quite relaxed, non-agitated. So these are indications that showing us some sort of a maturity is happening in ourselves. So that is where even Buddha mentioned. So more and more the practice is leading to this kind of a thadi state, kind of an unattached state, unshakable state. So it's a kind of a gradual improvement. So correct, as you mentioned, it is kind of a forerunner of the arahant's mind. Yes.
Question number 6. This is just a comment regarding an early question. Just a comment regarding sitting practice causing pain, preventing a prolonged sitting session. I would look for a wall to lean against to support the spine. I felt the same as the person who asked the previous question initially, but once I got a proper meditation stool and adjusted the height to suit my comfort and put a few cushions, I realized I can sit for any length of time without any discomfort. That is worth trying. That's the end.
Yeah, definitely. I have tried so many stools from in my early practice when I started. So 1 week one stool, another week another stool, another week another cushion, another week another place, trying inside the kuti, trying outside the kuti, trying in the meditation hall. So many experiments. Actually, it's a kind of a struggle. So we as beginners, we have to sort of sympathize. So I can remember my early stages. So how disturbing it was when these painful feelings are happening, and it's kind of a struggle. So we ourselves have to sort of go through it. So never giving up, not becoming disheartened by these problems, obstacles, but makes them as a kind of a way of strengthening ourselves. So it's always difficult, actually. It's not a kind of a smooth line that we have to pass by, but rather various difficulties are there. But as I mentioned, so slowly, slowly, as you are seasoning the body, as you are able to subside various defilements, as you are able to improve mindfulness, concentration, and some amount of wisdom being developed, so the path becomes easier and easier. So beginning, it appears like a struggle, true. But later, with time, so it becomes more and more comfortable. Yeah.
That ends the questions for today, Bhante.
Yeah.
Really good 5 minutes, so we'll finish up anyway. And if anyone wants to ask us any more questions regarding the retreat, just hang on back and then you can talk to us directly. So I'd like to finish the session. I'd like to first of all thank Bhante and pass our merits for giving up valuable time for this program, as well as the organizers and people seen and unseen participating and contributing to the program, as well as the participants, because without you this program would not happen. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Theravan Sarnai.
Yeah, Theravan Sarnai.